VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
Well, friends, we're glad you've joined us today. Should be a very provocative program, provoking our learning as to what's going on and to think about matters going on in the Middle East in particular. As you may be well aware, Israelis have now for the second time this year cast their vote for prime minister. However, the outcome still hangs in the balance. How do their elections work? What are the implications of this election? And leading up to the election, we have a congresswoman here from the United States who this past Sunday indicated that the very existence of Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is contradictory to peace. We'll learn about that. And then with all of the election issues going on, we now also have these oil fields in Saudi Arabia that have been destroyed. And so the question remains, by who? Fingers pointing toward Iran, but Iran is saying, hey, if there is a military strike, then there's going to be an all-out war. Well, addressing these critical issues with us today on the Middle East, we welcome back Dr. Jimmy DeYoung. He's a student of Bible prophecy and expert on the Middle East. He lived in Israel for many, many years, leads a ministry, Prophecy Today, has spent years not only living in Israel, but has conducted many trips there. He's a noted conference speaker, constantly monitors news regarding Israel and the Middle East, and provides a unique blend of political, biblical, and prophetic insight absent from much of the media today. Dr. DeYoung, welcome back here to Crosstalk.
Boy, it's great to be with you, Jim, on Crosstalk, the oldest talk program on Christian radio. That's a real honor for me to be a part of this broadcast.
Well, certainly been around since the early 70s. It's morphed into what it is today. But let's begin with this election for prime minister in Israel. And before we enter into discussion about the deadlock in this election, would you refresh us and refresh our understanding as to how elections are conducted in Israel? Because it's quite different than how we do it here in the United States.
Jim, it certainly is. And it is not a direct election for the prime minister. The prime minister is going to be elected by a group of members of Knesset. Now, there are 120 members of the Knesset. There's about maybe 28 different political parties. About 18 of them are key to any and most of the elections. And what people do when they go to the polls, it's like going into a congressional district. The whole state of Israel is going to have one purpose for the vote. Anybody walking into the polling place will go in there and vote for a political party. Whichever party they like and align themselves with, whoever may be the leader of that political party, and that would be their choice for prime minister, that's the political party they're going to vote for. Now, each of the political parties have 120 names on their election list. And after the vote is counted by everybody voting for their political party, they put all the votes together, they have a percentage to be able to break the mold and get over and have a mandate to be a member of the Knesset. That party will then count up all the votes they got. They will number them up, and that determines how many members of the Knesset they are going to be allocated when the next Knesset comes in. And at that point in time, then whoever has been chosen to elect and put together a coalition government, that will cause the Knesset then to come into session and vote. And that's how they elect a prime minister. It's a bailiwick. It's very difficult to understand. I've just told it to you, and I'm not sure I quite still understand it. You talk to the Israelis, and they're not sure about it either.
Well, it's interesting because we've been down this road once already this year, and that election was a deadlock. One would think that there would have been a coalition of parties and talk going into the second election.
Well, it's almost exactly a repeat of that April election, mm-hmm. Jim. It's unbelievable. The numbers, in fact, the two top parties would be the Blue and White Party and then the Likud Party. The Likud political party is the party of Benjamin Netanyahu, the present prime minister. The Blue-White Party is a block of different smaller parties who come together to form one political block, the Blue-White Party, and they are made up of about five different generals. And each of these generals had the distinction of being the chief of staff of the Israeli Defense Force. That's the number one military man in a country, and that person is responsibility for leading the Israeli Defense Force to defend the Jewish people and the state of Israel. Now, most of those guys, if you become that position in the Israeli military, you're somewhat of an egomaniac. I don't mean that unkindly, but that type of leader has to have a great, strong ego. Well, if you have five of them come together, you can imagine the old saying is, have two Jews come together for a conversation, you'll have three opinions. Just think if you have five former generals who headed up the military, and they're going to form a political party. And so that's where they are right now, but it is a stalemate. The Blue-White Party has already received, according to the count, and it's not quite complete yet, but according to the count, Blue-White has 33 seats in the Knesset, and the Likud has 32 seats. Now, that's exactly how it came out in April when those elections were taking place. But then what they have to do, either the leader, and that would be General Benny Gantz of the Blue-White Party, or Prime Minister Netanyahu of the Likud Party, they have to be able to form a coalition, take all of these smaller parties, all the Knesset members that they have, put them together with what they have in their count of Knesset members, and that forms the coalition, and then they must get to a simple majority of 61 votes out of the 120 votes that are available there in the Knesset, and that's how they'll come to decision on who is going to be the prime minister. Now, there's several options we can talk about, but that's the procedure and how it all comes together.
Now, one of the things I noticed going into this election, we heard one of the parties or candidates who kept referring to, I'm for building the third temple, and that the prime minister is agreed to form, I believe, a coalition with him about those interested in putting together a third temple. How does that factor into all of this? What was that talk about?
Well, it's a very interesting operation that's coming together because prior to the election, Netanyahu, he is a very brilliant man. He was able to give you the numbers almost before they were published, even after the election. And he realized there was a party that was led by a man who really had no chance of being able to make the threshold to become a member of the Knesset or have two or three members of the Knesset. And so he went to him and he said, look, why don't you come into Likud? He used to be, by the way, a member of Likud, started his own party because of his platform. And that was, he said, if I'm elected prime minister, no chance, but if I was elected, I would start to build the temple immediately. Mm-hmm. So Netanyahu talked him in before the elections to joining Likud, and he's promised him he will be a minister if Netanyahu has been able to form the coalition, set the cabinet of the Israeli government in place, and that then would include his platform of building a temple on the Temple Mount. The prime minister also, prior to the elections, was in there in the Judea and Samaria, the Jewish settlements. He gave a commitment to them. He was going to give sovereignty to Judea and Samaria, what they refer to as the West Bank, and the Arabs at least do. So he was going to give sovereignty to that. He was going to give sovereignty to the Jordan Valley. So you're talking about a lot of people to the right in the body politic of the thinking of the Jewish people in Israel. And they were already connecting with Netanyahu to form that block, that coalition. But part of that platform is going to be building that next temple.
Very interesting. So it would seem with all these coalition building things that the prime minister did, he's still not at that majority level.
He's not at the majority level. He has right now about 58 members of the Knesset from all the different parties that would form the bloc with him. Blue and White has about 53. But the stick in the spokes of the bicycle is a man named Avigdor Lieberman. He is a Russian who made immigration to Israel a number of years ago. And you might remember in 1991, Judy and I had just arrived to live in Jerusalem, become journalists there, and start a church. In that year, 1.3 million Russians immigrated to Israel. That was a 37% increase in the population of the state of Israel. In fact, before that, there were more Jews in New York City than there were in all of Israel. Hmm. With those Russian-speaking people coming in, Avigdor Lieberman, who had already been there for a while, saw the advantage of putting together a political party. He did that, and it's entitled Israel Our Home. And he is the one. He has 9 members of the Knesset in his party, a result of this recent election, and he could put either one of them over. 53 and 9 would be 62. That's a simple majority. Or 58 and 9 would be 57. That would be a 67, a great majority. Avigdor Lieberman, though, he has some problems with Netanyahu and the blue and white. He does not want any of the religious party, and especially the ultra-Orthodox religious parties, to be in the government. He wants a secular government. He does not want to have to abide by the religious rules on the Sabbath, on Saturday. He wants to be able to have transportation, public transportation open, all the stores open. He wants to go to civil marriages. He wants to get rid of the religious incumbents that are on the Israeli people. And that's his thrust. And he's playing hardball. He is going to be the kingmaker, I do believe.
So is it possible that there might be yet a third election? And if so, would that bear any difference to where we are today?
Isn't that ironic? There may well be. The end result of all of what we're talking about, Jim, may result in a third election. Now, it's going to be very interesting how Netanyahu, who is a genius, the man is very brilliant. In fact, you might remember Einstein had about an IQ of about 187. Netanyahu's IQ is about 237. Hmm. He's a brilliant man. He knows how to figure things out. And he might come to a decision like he did last time. He saw he was not going to be able to form a government last time, so he dissolved the Knesset, which meant they couldn't vote on him, but they had to go to new elections. That is a viable possibility. If they're not able to put together a unity government, that's what they're looking forward to, and that's what Netanyahu is recommending right now, and I can explain that later, but that is a viable possibility. It will be a repeat of the April elections. They may have to go to a third election. That will be unprecedented in the state of Israel.
Sure, and has a second election ever been? Is that unprecedented as well, or has Israel been down this road?
They did go one time back in the 80s when the Yitzhak Shamir was the prime minister, and he was vying to hold that position with Shimon Peres. Both of them had been prime minister. They came together and ultimately, finally, formed a coalition government, but they had to go to second elections at that time, and so that is a viable possibility. But it's never been that they've had to go to a third election within 1 year, and that is viable this time.
We're going to take a quick break here on Crosstalk. Dr. Jimmy DeYoung is our guest today. We're talking about this Israeli election. We're also going to be getting in the next segment to the Saudi oil fields targeted. But first, we're going to be hearing from a congresswoman here from the United States and what she claimed that the prime minister himself, his very existence, is contrary to peace. Back in 1 minute, you're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, president of the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, anything new found in outer space recently?
Chris, there's always something new. Recently, the Hubble telescope located several giant gaseous planets orbiting around burned-out stars. Now, gaseous planets are not strange. Jupiter, Neptune, Saturn, they're all large and gaseous, so that's not a problem. What is a problem is that the Big Bang Theory dates these at 12.7 billion years old. This, according to the theory, is much too soon after the Big Bang to have formed the heavy elements which are present. They just don't know what they're going to do. Well, I don't know what they're going to do either, but I do know what they should do. They should give up the Big Bang Theory because it's wrong. It doesn't fit the evidence. There's got to be a better way. And there is such a way. It's found back in Genesis.
To learn more about creation, get our free DVD called That's a Fact. Call us at 800-628-7640 and mention the promo code FACT.
Mm-hmm.
You're listening to Crosstalk on VCY America. Our guest today, Dr. Jimmy DeYoung, as we're talking about the Israeli election, and also this segment will be getting into the Saudi oil that's been targeted. But by the way, his website, prophecytoday.com, prophecytoday.com. I would like to talk about another issue here, Dr. DeYoung, and that is leading up to this election, we had U.S. Congresswoman Ilhan Omar of Minnesota. She was on CBS's Face the Nation, and hosting the program this past Sunday was Margaret Brennan. And I'd like you to hear the question, ladies and gentlemen, posed to Ilhan Omar and also her response. But I want you to hear how she said the very existence of Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is contrary to peace. So let's listen to this clip, and then we're going to have Dr. DeYoung respond to it. Let's listen in to what was said on Face the Nation.
You were specifically banned by the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, from visiting that country. Mm-hmm. He faces a very tough election in the next few days. If he doesn't win, are you going to try to go back, and do you stand by your call for a boycott of Israel?
I certainly hope that the people of Israel make a different decision. And my hope is that they recognize that his existence, his policies, his rhetoric really is contradictory to the peace that we are all hoping that that region receives and receives soon. Just right now, if you look at the annexation that's taking place, for many of us in Congress, there has been a long-standing support for a two-state solution. Mm-hmm. And this annexation now is going to make sure that that peace process does not happen, and we will not get to a two-state solution.
His existence, his policies, his rhetoric, contrary to peace. Dr. DeYoung.
You know, that's a very dangerous statement that she just made. And the fact is, let me just remind everybody, the reason she was banned from being able to enter Israel, it's a state law in the state of Israel that anybody who wants to boycott and divest from any relationship with the Jewish state are not going to be allowed to come in and spew their radical rhetoric in the land of Israel. She had already put together a schedule which did not include any stop in what is the part of Israel that she should be talking to the people about and understanding why they are not making decisions that would go along with the Palestinian people. She was only going to meet with the Palestinian leaders. The Palestinian leaders have already made a decision. They are not going to sit, even if Donald Trump comes out with the greatest peace plan ever in the world. That's what he says it's going to be. But even if he comes out with that, the Palestinians, and Mahmoud Abbas, the president of the Palestinian Authority, said we're not going to sit there. And Representative Omar was simply going to meet with the Palestinian radical leaders who want to wipe Israel off the face of the earth. And so that national law in the state of Israel was put in play at that time. Then they, in fact, there was another member of the Congress from Michigan that was going to go with her to leave, and she is about Palestinian background, and so they made a decision to allow her to come in if she wanted to see her grandmother. She was basically saying, I want to see my grandmother, and then all of a sudden, there she was, and she didn't care because she didn't want to stop her convictions from being displayed about the Palestinian idea of replacing the Jewish state of Israel and establishing a state called Palestine. But as you think about Omar, a couple of other things you've got to think about. You probably want to talk sometime in this conversation today about Tayyip Erdogan there in Turkey, because he's a major player in the Middle East. But recently, Omar went over to Turkey and spoke at a conference that was totally anti-Israel. And actually what happened is she met with Tayyip Erdogan in Washington, D.C., and the president of Turkey has her in his pocket. Omar is presently an agent for the Turkish government and for President Tayyip Erdogan. She's been seen visiting the consulate there in Chicago. I mean, she's a, and in fact, the Turkish people, the Turkish newspaper, the state newspaper is calling for the Turkish people to donate to her political campaign to keep her in office, which is a federal offense here in the United States.
Oh, my.
Some work, I'm telling you.
Yes, and now we have President Erdogan, who has this renewed interest in nuclear weapons.
Well, he said that he should be given nuclear weapons. And here's his excuse for wanting to have nuclear weapons. Israel has nuclear weapons. Well, he doesn't know that's for true. I've been there. I've been covering since 91, 28 years as a journalist in the state of Israel. I've been to the location near Dimona where their nuclear power operation is located. I've been to the secret Air Force base. I've talked with political leaders. And not a one of them has ever admitted to me that they have nuclear weapons of mass destruction. That's a foregone conclusion. And I want to tell you, that's a stopper for anybody trying to attack the Jewish state of Israel, because their response would be with nuclear weapons. So Israel most likely has nuclear weapons. Erdogan say, well, Israel has it, so I want it. Pakistan has it. Well, that's a very dangerous move. Mm-hmm. You gave Tayyip Erdogan nuclear weapons. Erdogan is... He, first of all, wants to be the pan-Islamic leader of the entire Middle East. He wants to revive the old Ottoman Empire. Remember, the Ottoman Empire
yes.
controlled the entire Middle East for about 450 years. He wants these nuclear weapons of mass destruction. You put those in his hands, and he will be a dangerous character in the Middle East, which is a part of a prophetic scenario that is found in God's Word.
Well, I'd like to hit another issue here, and that is your analysis of the recent attacks on the oil fields in Saudi Arabia. There's a lot of finger-pointing on as to who sent these missiles and drones in for the destruction. Several statements being made is pointing at Iran as being the prime suspect. They deny this. Your thoughts on what's happening with this attack on the oil fields?
Well, of course, Iran would deny the fact that they are the ones behind this attack on the Saudi Arabian infrastructure, the petroleum infrastructure there. They were actually fired at from two different locations. And that's why there's a lot of confusion and why, really, we don't have the bottom line as of yet. Now, I have intelligence sources that give me just solid information. I've never found them at fault with any wrong information they've given me. And here's what they're saying. The cruise missiles were fired from Khuzestan, which is in southern Iran. Those were cruise missiles. We've heard about the drones, but cruise missiles went in there. They've been displayed already. And from the that was fired from the main oil heartland of Iran. The drones were fired out of western Iraq in Anbar province, which is near the U.S. Air Force base that is there. And so the conclusion is that the United States and Saudi Arabia intel are coming to the edges of all of this information. I stand to be corrected, but we do know the whole thing was staged by the Iran's Revolutionary Guard Corps, and they're the ones responsible for it. The Israeli government is upset because they see no response either from the United States or Saudi Arabia. And Prime Minister Netanyahu is making the statement that if President Trump and Bin Salman, who is the crown prince of Saudi Arabia, if they don't do something pretty quick, the Iranians are going to say, okay, well, we can fire at will. We can destroy a major portion of the structure for the oil production, petroleum production there in Saudi Arabia. Nobody comes after us. Let's go now after Israel. Because they've been saying, you know, almost every day, we're going to wipe Israel off the face of the earth. By the way, the press is giving them a pass on that. And world leaders are giving them a pass. Have you ever heard anybody get really upset because of that Iranian rhetoric? They're not upset about it. And Israel is only trying to defend themselves. And if Iran gets the go-ahead because there's no response from the United States nor from Saudi Arabia, then there's going to be carte blanche as far as the Iranians are concerned. They'll go after every U.S. military operation. They'll go after the state of Israel. They can even go after. They've got missiles, the Shahab missile, that can carry a nuclear weapon all the way into the European Union. So this is a major event that has taken place there in Iran, sponsored by Iran. And, of course, we see this as part of the end-time scenario as well in Bible prophecy. That's what's so exciting to me, Jim. I cover the political because it is setting the stage for the prophetic to be fulfilled. That's what we see happening today. This is a perfect example.
It's also interesting to hear what's coming from Iran's foreign minister, because he is warning and he's saying, hey, Iran will not blink. If we have to defend ourselves against any U.S. or Saudi military strike, he said this is going to lead to an all-out war.
Well, I'm not sure I believe that as much as the fact is they will be willing to use their proxies. Who have they been at the Israel-Northern border using to go after the Jewish state? Hezbollah. They're in southern Lebanon at Israel's northern border. They're almost at a point of war between the Israeli Defense Force and the Hezbollah terrorist organization, sponsored, provided for, trained, manned by the Iranian government. That's a proxy. In the south of Israel, Hamas is another proxy for Iran. And when you stop to think about it, Syria has become somewhat of a proxy for Iran as well. They have about 120,000 members of the Revolutionary Guard in Syria. They have military bases. One of them at one time was 2.5 miles from the Israeli border there in Kenetra, just north of the Israeli border in southern Syria. So this is a dangerous situation. The Iranians are saying, we're going to wipe Israel off the face of the earth. And they even said the other day, we can do it in 9 minutes. This is a major threat, and it needs to be paid attention to.
Indeed. Now, you said, Dr. DeYoung, that you look at this, you follow this not only politically, but prophetically as well. Prophetically, there is going to be war in this region.
Absolutely. Ezekiel chapter 38 mentions the players. It mentions over in verse 2 of chapter 38 of the book of Ezekiel, Magog. And when you go back to Genesis 10, you see Magog was the grandson of Noah, who went to establish a state. He went north of the Caspian and Black Sea, and he established what is modern-day Russia. Also in chapter 38 and verse 2 and verse 6, it says Meshech, Tubal, Gomer, and Togarma. Well, that would be modern-day Turkey. Even in the times of Asia Minor, you look at a map at that time, and Turkey today, which was Asia Minor then, was divided into four parts, Meshech, Tubal, Gomer, and Togarma. When you go to verse 5 of Ezekiel 38, it says Persia. And until 1936, Persia, that was their name. And the nation that speaks the Persian language today, which is Iran, is the follow-up on the Persian nation. And they're the ones that are going to be a part of it. And then you can mention the other nations that over there in the book of Daniel, chapter 11, verses 40 and following, it talks about the king of the north and the king of the south. King of the north, according to the entire chapter of 11 in Daniel, the king of the north would be modern-day Syria, the king of the south, modern-day Egypt. And then, of course, Isaiah chapter 17, it says Syria will make the first move to try to destroy the Jewish state of Israel, that is Israel's northern border. Bashar Assad making the statement, hey, we're going to wipe Israel off the face of the earth. We're going to take the Golan Heights first. We can continue up the other side, but boy, this thing is set up. The political setting, the prophetic in faith.
Dr. Jimmy DeYoung here today on Crosstalk. Our number to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829. We'll be right back.
How is your marriage relationship? Do you have a spirit-filled marriage? Is your marriage one in which the lost world can look in and see Christ represented? Many of us know that we are called to have such a marriage, but fail to make it happen, perhaps due to lack of knowledge on the topic. In the booklet, What Does a Spirit-Filled Marriage Look Like?, biblical counselor Susan Heck draws principles from the book of Ephesians. She presents 13 doctrines that guide a marriage that will bring glory to God. You'll learn about humility, forgiveness, generosity, unity, and much more. You'll also learn not only to know these principles, but how to grow them in your marriage relationship. VCY is offering one copy of this booklet for a donation of $6, 5 copies for a donation of $24, or 10 copies for $42. Just call 1-800-729-9829. 1-800-729-9829.
Dr. Jimmy DeYoung is our guest today. His website, prophecytoday.com, prophecytoday.com. Our lines are already packed, and folks will be getting into calls in just a moment. But Dr. DeYoung, just give us a brief word about your ministry.
The Lord has opened up an opportunity, Jim, for us to be able to focus on Bible prophecy. I started teaching Bible prophecy to children 6 to 12 years of age when I was a member of the Word of Life staff in upstate New York at Scroon Lake. Jack Wirtzen, the director and founder, who is now with the Lord, asked me to teach the book of Revelation. I thought he wanted me to do that to the adult crowd, which is Judy and I ran the adult conference ground. No, he wanted me to teach the little children, and he wanted me to teach Revelation to them. So I had to develop a way. You know, a child 6 to 12 has an attention span of 38 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to be able to teach them Revelation. I developed a method to do that. We were just amazed of how their young minds would soak up the prophetic word of God. That turned me on to really dedicating my life to talk about Bible prophecy, looking at the past, the present, and the future, see how God's prophetic word has foretold these events would happen, see how some of them are even being fulfilled, even as we're here on the radio with you right now, and then recognize that those prophecies in the past have been fulfilled, the prophecies in the future would also be fulfilled. That's a consistency that you get from studying and understanding the hermeneutical approach to, and that's the science of interpreting Scripture, understanding how the Lord lays it all out. So we started doing that. The Lord opened up the opportunity. I'm here in Chillicothe, Illinois, over in Peoria, Illinois. There's a radio station called WPEO, WPEO Radio, long-time radio, Christian radio station.
Mm-hmm.
And back in 1999, Bob Ulrich, who is the manager of that station, he and his wife Kay would lead tours over there all the time. And he once asked me when I'd like to do a prophecy program on his station. That started our radio outreach.
Mm-hmm.
Now, DCY America cares our daily five-minute broadcast. Mm-hmm. We're so pleased. So radio and television has been key. I just finished doing 8 programs with John Ankerberg, which will be aired upcoming in January, teaching the entire book of Revelation. It'll be seen across the world. They'll translate it in 14 dialects there in India. These are the things we're doing. We're trying to reach as many as we possibly can, warn them of the soon coming of Jesus Christ, make sure they're prepared by knowing Jesus Christ is Lord and Savior. And this type of information will cause you to live pure and be productive. And that's the thrust that God has given us, and we so honor him for his provision over the years.
And the website, folks, prophecytoday.com. prophecytoday.com. Incidentally, those interviews you did with John Ankerberg, they'll be airing over WVCY television as well and stream through VCYAmerica.tv. Let's go to the phone lines. Ed is calling from Spencer, Tennessee. Ed, you're on the air.
Yes, hello. I'm wondering now that since Syria is a proxy for Iran, is the Isaiah 17:1, is that going to be happening real soon when Damascus will be destroyed?
Thank you, Ed.
It says 5 times in Isaiah chapter 17 that indeed Damascus will be destroyed. That's an absolute prophecy yet to be fulfilled in the future. And as I said a moment ago, that Syria is going to be the first nation to make a move. It's there in Daniel chapter 11 and verse 40. The king of the north, geographically, we're talking about Syria, and that's confirmed earlier on in chapter 11 of Daniel, will make the first move. Bashar Assad, within the last 6 months, has said a number of times, we're going to take back the Golden Heights. Remember in the 67 Six-Day War, his father, who was Hafez al-Assad, lost the Golden Heights. They tried to get them back a number of times. They've not been successful. But now Bashar Assad wants to appease what happened, the problem with his father, and he wants to take back the Golan Heights. When you've got Turkey, Russia, Iran, right there in Syria, at Israel's northern border, that prophetic scenario looks like it could come to pass very quickly. It'll happen at the beginning of the 7-year tribulation period.
We can't set a date for that, but Dr. DeYoung, you believe that time is drawing near?
I do believe that even the next event on God's calendar of activities, the rapture, could happen today. In fact, Jim, there is no prophecy that must be fulfilled before the rapture. Then that seven-year period of time, Jesus referred to it as the tribulation period, Matthew chapter 24 and verse 29. And he said that tribulation period will come into place. He gave us some hints there in the Olivet Discourse what it would be like. After that, he would come back. But it's in that first 6 months of that tribulation period when this alignment of nations will come. Because the people, Ezekiel 38:8, 38:11, says the Jewish people will be living safely in the land of Israel. They're not going to be able to live safely at peace, really, until Jesus Christ comes back. With this one exception, when the Antichrist, Daniel 9:27, confirms a peace agreement, and there are already three of them on the table, Camp David Accords, Oslo Accords, peace treaty between Israel and Jordan, those are on the table waiting for the Antichrist not to sign a peace treaty, but confirm those three on the table. That starts the clock ticking on the 7 years. Mm-hmm. That begins when the Jewish people say, hey, we're at rest, we're safely living in the land, because they have a false Messiah, the Antichrist, telling them that they're going to be able to rebuild their temple there by the midway point of the tribulation. That's when this alignment of nations is going to attack, and that alignment led by Russia.
Our telephone number to Crosstalk is 800-733-9829, 1-800-733-9829. John in Milwaukee, you're on the air.
Afternoon. I'm hoping you can help me out with this because you say that rapture could happen at any time?
Yes, sir.
And, the churches are supposed to be consecutive. And the last one is the Church of Laodicea. Does that mean we're in the Church of Laodicea?
Thank you, John.
No, sir, I don't believe that is the case. And I don't believe those churches listed there in Revelation chapters 2 and 3. I just taught this last Sunday night here at the church in Chillicothe, Illinois. Those are not consecutive periods of time. They are descriptions, and actually the church that is talked about, all the seven churches, the Lord telling John the Revelator to deliver these letters I've got for these seven churches in Asia Minor, and each of those are descriptions of churches that were alive and well at that time. They are descriptions of churches that are alive and well right now, but they are not going through the 2,000-year period of time consecutively unfolding. Let me give one example. You just mentioned the church at Laodicea. Well, what was the problem? In fact, in those messages to the seven churches, those letters, Revelation 2 and 3, the Lord consistently says, I know thy works, and I know what you're doing. And he understood that the church at Laodicea was neither hot nor cold, but lukewarm. What does hot mean? Cleansing. What is cold mean? That means refreshing. What is lukewarm? You're neither hot nor cold. I want you to be hot or cold. That's not a big problem. Why would that be the time in which we're living? People are lukewarm. That's right, but that's just one description. How about the church at Sardis there in chapter 3? It says, I know thy works, and you have a name, but you are dead. If I was going to say any of those churches that we're living in today would be the church at Sardis. So just remember, there are not consecutive periods of time looking over the church age these last 2,000 years, but they are individual churches alive and well then, alive and well now. And as you study, that's a wonderful study. As you study that, you can see exactly what it's talking about.
John, thanks for the call. We're going next to Jeremy in Decorah, Iowa. Jeremy, you're on the air with Dr. DeYoung.
Yeah, hello?
Yes.
We got a pretty big Orthodox Jewish community here, and I was talking to them last week about rebuilding the temple, and they said they don't believe that it's going to be rebuilt until the Messiah comes. So I'm just wondering what they think about this plan to rebuild it before then.
Well, the fact is there are a group of Orthodox Jews around the world that do believe the Messiah is going to build that temple. And if you're talking to those Orthodox Jews in the United States, you know they're not very Orthodox. Because if they were truly Orthodox, they would make Aliyah, they would make immigration to Israel, they'd be in the land where God has called them to return to. In fact, those are the prophecies that are being fulfilled, Ezekiel chapter 37. So first of all, they're not as Orthodox as they claim to be. Secondly, the Orthodox people, and it's about almost 30% of the entire population of the state of Israel who are living there, they're the ones saying, yes, the Messiah is going to come and rebuild that temple. And always it was the responsibility of the people. Remember the second temple? After they came out of the Babylonian captivity, the book of Ezra, chapters 1 through 6, well, who was it that built the temple then? Well, that was the Jewish people. God didn't come out of heaven to build that second temple. Zerubbabel, leading a group of Jews, about 50,000 of them, from the Babylonian captivity, came back. And in fact, they just messed around for about 25 years before they got serious about building the temple. Haggai and Zechariah come along. If you're reading chapter 5 of Ezra, that's where you place Haggai and Zechariah. One of them, a very distinguished man, Zechariah, the other, a crusty old man, something like me over there. And they both were contemporaries, and they were, what are they telling the people? Build the temple, build the temple. That's what the Orthodox Jews in Israel believe, and they made preparation. They believe the Messiah will come at the time that temple is, because they have to have a temple. That's their thinking. It's wrong. Messiah is going to come back. He will then build the temple. But their thinking today is we have to build the temple. The Messiah then will come. That's wrong. But they're going at it anyway, and that's why I report it.
Thank you, Jeremy, for the call. Our number to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829. I have a couple open lines, 800-733-9829. Let's go to Pensacola, Florida. And Julie, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I did want to say that I do pray for Prime Minister Netanyahu often, especially during these times. I do remember several months ago about hearing about him in the news, something about his wife having been found guilty of fraud with the campaign funds or something like that. And my question is, was that really fake news? How should we pray for Prime Minister Netanyahu? I would like to see him have his victory.
Okay. Thank you, Julie.
Well, the Bible tells us in 1 Timothy chapter 2, the first prayers we're to offer up are for those in higher authority. In other words, political leaders. Before you pray for the pastor, the evangelist, the missionary, pray for those in higher authority. And that's an absolute that we're supposed to be involved in, a prayer for those like Prime Minister Netanyahu. As it relates to his wife, you've got to understand in the political arena, there are those who want to take you down, especially a guy named Prime Minister Netanyahu. He is the longest-serving prime minister in the history of the state of Israel. David Ben-Gurion had that record, but just this last July, Prime Minister Netanyahu surpassed the length of time he has been prime minister. There are people that don't like him. There are people that realize he's had to make decisions that offends them. So they're doing what they can to take him down. There's even corruption that has been accused. He's been accused of corruption himself, and that's one of the reasons it's going to be difficult to put together a unity government after this last election. He is denying any guilt at all to this corruption. I don't know his mind. I don't know what he's actually been doing. I don't know what evidence they have. But that does not negate your responsibility to pray for him. I would suggest you do it every day.
Let's take a quick break. Dr. Jimmy DeYoung with us. Our phone number to Crosstalk, 800-733-9829, 800-733-9829. Our guest website, prophecytoday.com. Back in just a minute.
For the Worldview Week in Minute, I'm Brandon House. Our website's worldviewradio.com. America is under siege. Many experts, including Dr. Peter Pry, has declared that World War III started in the summer of 2018 when Russia attacked our power grid, hacking into our system. We have Dr. Kevin Freeman declaring we are already in World War III when it comes to economic warfare. Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa have formed their own banking system and are going after the American dollar. In fact, he did the Pentagon research for how, well, the crash of 2008 occurred, which involved foreign entities going after our stock market and Fannie and Freddie Mae. My friends, Americans need to wake up to the worldview war waging in America. We invite you to visit SiegeTheMovie.com and watch a free trailer. SiegeTheMovie.com. You're being given a lot of fake news, and Americans need to awaken to the fact that this is a worldview war, a spiritual battle at its very foundation.
Dr. Jimmy DeYoung with us today on Crosstalk from prophecytoday.com. We're going right back to the phone lines, and we've got Jose calling next. Hi, Jose. You're on the air with Dr. Jimmy DeYoung.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just had a simple question. Do you believe that the attack on the oil out in Saudi Arabia, is that an attack basically against the U.S. dollar? Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, not necessarily. Howbeit, the result of that attack on the petroleum fields there in Saudi Arabia has resulted in the rise of gasoline all across the world. Not only the United States, not so bad for the United States. We are energy independent. We do not depend on any nation to supply our gasoline, and that's a great position to be in. But let me tell you what that attack is all about. It's an eschatological attack. Saudi Arabia and Iran have different eschatologies. There's two segments of the body politic of the Islamic world, and that would be the Sunnis and the Shiites. And I'm not going to go into the discussion how they came into existence a long time ago. It was to see who was going to take over from Muhammad when he died. Putting that aside, both of these, the Sunnis and the Shiites, have eschatological ideas of what the end times will be like. The Shiites believe, and that would be basically Iran and all of these proxies that Iran has all over the world, the rest of the Islamic world, both the Arabs and the Muslim nations, they are of the Sunni persuasion. But the Shiite eschatology is that a catastrophic event is going to take place. Iran could bring about that catastrophic event, and that would bring back the Mahdi, the Messiah. That's Arabic for Messiah, the 12th Imam. He will be resurrected, come to power. He will take over the world. He will set up a worldwide caliphate. He will be the caliph of that caliphate. And then as you continue to dig into their eschatology, they have a understanding that if there is a leader in Saudi Arabia that is named Salman, King Salman, hello, then Salman, who is the crown prince, his son, if there's a leader named Salman in Saudi Arabia, he is killed, that will bring back the Messiah. So you see the possibility of a catastrophic event by destroying those oil fields there in Saudi Arabia. And if they are not responded to their attacks on Saudi Arabia by the United States or Saudi Arabia, they're going to continue. It's going to be more cataclysmic as they continue their attacks on the rest of the world. And if indeed Salman has died during his reign as king of Saudi Arabia during this time, the Mahdi, the Messiah, the Islamic Messiah, will come back to power and lead Iran into what they call the worldwide caliphate.
Wow. Lisa's calling next from Wisconsin. Lisa, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. I have a question regarding the alignment of countries that are going to attack Israel in the middle of the tribulation. How can that be in the middle of the tribulation? Because it's saying the scriptures that it will take 7 years to clean up the debris of the war.
You basically answered your own question, honey. Yes, indeed. That's exactly right. That's Ezekiel chapter 39. It'll take 7 years to burn the weapons and then to bury the people. It's going to be a long period of time that are fought in that battle. I never said, and the scriptures, if you read them correctly, does not say it'll take way in the middle of the tribulation. I mentioned a moment ago it'll take place in the first 6 months of the tribulation period. And I talked about the Antichrist confirming a peace treaty. When he does that, Daniel 9:27 says that starts the seven-year clock ticking for the tribulation period. And one of the reasons that it has to take place in the first 6 months, remember the Antichrist, Daniel 11, verses 40 to 45, the Antichrist is going to be a major play in that alignment of nations. And in fact, the Antichrist at the same time is supposed to be in Rome, Italy, putting together a false church. So he has to get everything done with that alignment of nations, and then get back to Rome to continue his building of the false church there in Rome, Italy.
Hmm. Thank you, Lisa. We're going to squeeze one last caller in from Nebraska. Keith, you're on the air.
I've got a question for Jimmy. he mentioned that he thinks in Daniel 11, the king of the north is Syria. What is his opinion on who the king of the south might be?
Well, the king of the south is going to be Egypt. When you go back to chapter 11, verses 5 and following, it talks about a coalition will be put together, the king of the north, king of the south. And in fact, it says the king of the south will offer his daughter to the king of the north, and they will then form a coalition. As you read through the entire passage there, dealing from verse 5 to verse 19 in Daniel chapter 11, you can determine who those are by looking at the information given, the geographical locations. King of the North, remember, Jerusalem is in the center of the earth. All direction in this world is based on Jerusalem, Ezekiel 5:5. Due north is Syria, due south is Egypt. That's the king of the north and the king of the south.
Thanks for the call. We have just a little over a minute left. Dr. DeYoung, I'm wondering, you weren't born yesterday. You've been around a while, but yet you get so energized as to the things that are unfolding in the Middle East and things happening with Israel. Why does this energize you?
Because here are prophets who wrote 2,500 to 3,000 years ago, Jim, and they wrote down scenarios that would unfold in the last days. I have a PhD. I'm not bragging. It took me a long time. I was in my 60s before I got it. But now, as I've dug in deeply to the prophetic passages, I see it unfolding before my very eyes. And what is my blessed hope and your blessed hope? The rapture of the church. And I'm anticipating that Jesus Christ can come at any moment. And when I read all of these prophecies and see how they fit into the current events of today, man, I can't accept anything else except excitement. I just get turned on. I want to see Jesus. I was out walking last night, looked up at the moon. That's the same size of the New Jerusalem, and the New Jerusalem is going to be in the heavenlies. I just stood there and watched that moon, and I said, wow. One of these days, I'm going to be up near there in that New Jerusalem.
Oh, well.
It excites me. It just turns me on.
Well, Dr. DeYoung, thank you for carving time out and share your study, your research, your insight here with our listeners today.
It's been my joy. And let me just say to everybody, these things happening are not by chance. They were foretold by the ancient Jewish prophets, put in place by God. So keep looking up until that rapture does happen.
Okay, the stage is being set. And for Bible prophecy to be fulfilled, Dr. Jimmy DeYoung, our guest, prophecytoday.com is the website. Again, prophecytoday.com. Continue to be praying, folks. Be praying for our leaders, those who are in authority, that we might lead a quiet and peaceable life in all godliness and honesty. Pray also for the peace of Jerusalem. Thanks for joining us today on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208, or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.